Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Today we continue our series of conversations with the leading contenders vying to be Tulsa's next mayor. Election day is just 6 days away, Tuesday, June 11th. Yesterday we heard from former Mayor Kathy Taylor, and tomorrow we'll hear from the incumbent, Dewey Bartlett. And so today my guest is former District 8 Councilman Bill Christensen. Christensen served as District 8 Councilor from 2002 to 2011. He's a graduate of the University of Oklahoma and was a Marine Corps Reserve officer. He runs an aviation company, Christensen Aviation, in addition to his public service. And he joins us today to talk about his decision to run for mayor and his priorities if elected. Bill Christensen is my guest today on Studio Tulsa. Bill Christensen, welcome to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
I'm glad to be here.
Tell us, you spent 10 years on the council, got off the council, you decided to run for mayor. What went into the decision-making to run for mayor and run for mayor at this particular time?
Well, you know, when I was on the council, the last term I was on the council, after 8 years, I thought about running for mayor. And I quickly learned that you can't be a city councilor, run a business, and also run for mayor at the same time. So this has been a long thought out process whereby I decided not to run for a sixth term for District 8, which I really hated not to do because I love District 8 and the city. But I decided that I would run for mayor, you know, probably over a year ago, really strongly started thinking about it.
And what was the decision-making process to think about being the next mayor? What did you see that you wanted to do difference? What are your priorities if you're elected?
Well, you know, a lot of people have asked me that, and it's really a culmination of the many years I was on the council. You know, as a councilor, as one city councilor, you're kind of at the will of everybody else. You know, you can't just make decisions and have it enacted because you are a city councilor. And I had great respect for that position. But having said that, I think there were just things that went on, quite frankly, whether it was a zoning issue or a neighborhood issue or a budget issue, you know, unnecessary spending, in my opinion, just different ways of doing things, you know, and not to be, you know, blaming anybody else. But I just, at the end of the day, after being on there for 10 years, I really thought that I could do a better job based on my experience with my small business and my 10 years on the council.
Now, you come from the council, having spent all that time, and at times everybody got along great, other mm-hmm. times not so well. Mm-hmm. But how would you do differently, having come from the council, mm-hmm. as far as your relationship with the council as mayor?
I think that's a really good question. You know, I learned early in my first term that to get anything done that was of benefit to the citizens, you as one councilor had to build relationships with the other councilors and build relationships with other elected officials, whether they be state legislators, county commissioners, the mayor, the city auditor. So I don't know that I would do anything differently other than, I will tell you honestly, I'd be down there serving them coffee every morning, because it's really important to realize that when you become mayor, just because you are given the power that you're given by the charter doesn't mean you have to be the boss of the city. You know, there's a thing that I learned in the Marine Corps at Officer Candidate School called servant leadership. And that's where you bring people together, bring people to the table. Ultimately, you make the decision, but you discuss the things and participate, have other people participate with you. So from my standpoint, there's not one mayor and nine councilors. There's really 10 elected officials that represent the citizens of Tulsa, and we all need to work together.
Well, of course, as you well know, when you're on the council, sometimes you think super serving your own particular area, and that can lead to some parochialism. Mm-hmm. How do you overcome that?
Well, there is parochialism, and I think, you know, as a city councilor, the way I got reelected four times was by remembering who brought me to the dance, you might say, in that I represent the people in District 8. You know, so I take that very seriously. But I do say to you also, there's a balance between thinking about the goodness of the whole city versus just thinking parochially in your individual district. The one thing I think is unique, and I've learned a lot since I started my Listen and Learn tour around the city running for mayor, is that, you know, each district is different. Each district has its own set of issues. Different people live in different districts, and different councilors represent different districts, and the councilors have different, you know, educational levels, different work history, just different backgrounds, and just different life experiences. So you're thrown into that bowl, so to speak, with the nine other elected officials, and you just have to do your best to build relationships and then work together obviously, you've got to remember who brought you to the dance, but you also have to work together as a group of 10 to move the city forward.
Well, of course, and many times there are areas of our city that need probably a greater influx of city resources. Other parts of the city are doing okay. You know, they're doing all right.
That's right.
They don't need that much.
That's correct.
Well, let's talk about the biggest priorities. What are the biggest priorities as you see them for the next mayor?
I think the first biggest priority for me is public safety. You know, the last two administrations, the current administration laid off 121 police officers. The previous administration laid off several. I don't remember the exact number. And I think for me, reestablishing the proper number of police officers and the proper number of staff in the police department is critical, because public safety and people feeling safe in the city is the foundation of the city of Tulsa. You know, you can work your tail off on economic development, but if you've got crime statistics that are worse than the next city, people aren't going to come to Tulsa. They're not going to bring their business to Tulsa. So public safety for me is the number one issue. Along with public safety, though, I would say to you that public safety has broad-reaching tentacles. You know, the 911 call center, as an example, needs to be overhauled because, you know, people have been put on hold when they call 911, which in my way of thinking is totally, you know, unacceptable. But public safety is more than just police and fire and 911. It's, as an example, making sure that the streets get plowed if we have a severe snowstorm in January, because, you know, people may need EMSA and they may need to go into the residential areas. So just the overall public safety of the city of Tulsa is paramount for me.
Beyond public safety, what are some of the other priorities?
I think the biggest priority after public safety is building relationships, and I think somewhat bringing the city back together. I think over the years, you know, we've seen a division in the city, and I think as the mayor, it's your responsibility to bring the city together for the good of the city. You know, I would love to see people in other parts of town reaching out to the citizens in Districts 1 and 3. You know, commonly referred to as North Tulsa, although I like to call it Districts 1 and 3, because I think we need to work together to try to revitalize that area. So I think bringing people to the table and teaching and letting people know that reasonableness is good and that compromise is good, because at the end of the day, nobody's the king or queen. We're the leader, and we need to work together for the betterment of the city.
Let's talk a little bit about public safety. You mentioned the 120 officers that were lost in the last administration, given a terrible budget situation at the time, and the 9/11 call center. I also know that you have a proposal about returning fire staffing back up to, what is it, four or five?
Well, in theory, the perfect number is four men to an apparatus.
Yeah.
Yes.
So how do you raise the money to get there? Because when you look at the budget, we're looking, I mean, we come out of the recession, but we're not really growing the city budget that much. I mean, 2% this year, 1%, something like that over the last couple of years.
I think a really good example of that is the current council led by G.T. Bynum and Karen Gilbert. You know, the current mayor has proposed a budget to them for fiscal year 14, and he only has one police academy of 22 officers. The attrition rate in the city of Tulsa for police officers is 2.5. So his proposal ends up at the end of 2014 fiscal year with less officers than we have today. That is unacceptable. So how do you find the money to do these things? You reestablish your priorities, just like GT and Karen have done. They have gone through the budget, and I think they've found $1.9 million. You know, you obviously have to take it from something else and put it into public safety, but again, I say to you, there's nothing more important than public safety. I think the other thing that you need to do as mayor, you need to lead by example. And let me just give you some examples of that. You know, the previous two administrations have brought people on at-will employees in their mayor's office budget and paid a lot of those people a lot of money. I'm talking over $150,000 a year. To me, that's unacceptable. I've made the pledge that nobody in my administration will make more than the mayor of Tulsa, which is $105,000. So you combine that with also going through the departments, department by department, and doing kind of a zero-based budgeting analysis and just shaking, quite honestly, shaking the trees and finding where cost savings can be made. One of the things I feel is that we have grown into quite a few of middle and upper management positions. You know, we've got too many leaders and not enough doers. And I think that middle management crust there, you know, Mayor Bartlett's organizational chart is very vertical. He's got two or three people, high-paid people, in between him and department heads. See, I don't operate like that. I think that the mayor is sent down to the city of Tulsa by the citizens to be a hands-on, engaged mayor. And I think that in itself will save literally millions of dollars.
I see your point about that, but I do want to play a little devil's advocate. Mm-hmm. You know, you said you don't want anybody making more than the mayor.
Yeah.
But I know as a business owner, if you have somebody that has the expertise that you need for a given situation, a lot of times those people are in high demand. How do you get them to come on board for a salary in which they may take a cut or they wouldn't make as much in other situations or where there's competition for their services?
Well, let me clarify it. I didn't mean any employee in the city of Tulsa, not department heads and the specialty people like IT and all that. I realize they demand a salary and you've got to pay a salary that's competitive with the private sector. What I'm talking about is the internal staff of the mayor's office.
The political staff, if you will.
The at-will employees that the mayor brings. It's like so many positions. And whether all those positions are needed or not, I don't know. But I say to you that in my administration, I would want people that are there for the better good of the city and not to get wealthy off the city.
Let's talk a little bit about capital improvements. The city rejected the Vision 2 project, which is not still, we're still on Vision 1, 3 or 4 years to go, but what is your feeling about the next set of capital improvements? Because this term of mayor will at least lay the groundwork for what happens next if something happens next. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if you're in favor of a new capital improvement project. Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts?
Well, you know, when I first got on the council 12 years ago now, I was the chairman of the council when I first got elected, and Bill LaFortune, then mayor, came to me and said, you know, we need two city councilors to be on the Vision 2025 leadership team. So I said, I selected myself and Susan Neal, who's now an employee of the University of Tulsa. And we sat on the Vision 2025 leadership team that ultimately, you know, got the votes and passed 2025, that built the BOK Center and did a lot of good around the whole area. I watched that process. It was a really good, thorough, transparent, open, publicly discussed project. And it passed, and it passed resoundingly. And I think you can look back now and say, hey, that was a great thing for Tulsa. I am not against another vision package, but I say to you that the Vision 2 package that was done, this last one that failed, it was too short a time period. There wasn't enough information. It wasn't planned well. So I think we need to learn from that failure and look at how successful Vision 2025 was and try to duplicate the process that Vision 2025 used. But I say this to you also, that, you know, we have the needs of the city and we have the wants of the city. And my first goal as mayor is to fulfill the basic essential services or the needs of the citizens of Tulsa, like having enough police officers, like having enough snowplows, just the whole myriad of things, the services that we provide that are expected to be provided, the basic services. So, but I would still like to see another vision discussion. And I think the dialogue needs to open up probably about 2 years before the Vision 2025, 0.6 cents expires, the countywide tax. I would personally like to see the city discuss a city vision program that would be city only and let the outlying communities in the county do their own little vision package, depending on what the needs of their citizens are.
Instead of a sort of a wish list that goes into a big pool as in the last time.
The last time, you know, it wasn't only a wish list, but it was a pool of money.
The communities were having to come up with projects within like 30 days.
That's right. And, you know, the one thing that's interesting about that is, you know, I'm not against a children's museum. And I'm not against water in the river. I'm really not. I'm for all that. I'd love to see that. But like I said earlier, we've got to take care of the needs of the citizens of Tulsa first.
And those are not priorities for you.
No, they're not.
My guest today is Bill Christensen. He has served 10 years as a city council for District 8. He's one of the candidates for the office of mayor for the city of Tulsa. Election day is June 11th. He joins us today on Studio Tulsa. Well, I'm going to get into something you just were talking about, how you saw the original Vision 2025 as a very transparent, open process. And one of my subjects was city planning and citizen input. We've had Planet Tulsa, the master plan that's in place. We've had some discussions about it, but really we haven't seen, I mean, it is a long-term plan, but you would think some things would start percolating from it. And I think a lot of the people who were involved felt like, well, what's happening? We were involved in a citizen input process, mm-hmm. but nothing seems to be happening. And I want to talk about the Pearl District, you know, the forms-based coding. Mm-hmm. The first decision the city makes when it has to put the credibility of that plan that was created through citizen input, they basically gave to private businesses that wanted to transcend the rules. Mm-hmm. What is your feeling about that? Would you do things differently at City Hall?
You know, I was involved. I was on the council when the Plan E-Tulsa program was initiated. Actually, Susan Neal, many, many years ago when she was on the council, budgeted and talked the other councilors into budgeting the first amount of money to hire Freakinese to do the Plan E-Tulsa program. I think the Plan E-Tulsa program started out really good because it included people. There were public meetings. There was public dialogue. From my standpoint as a city councilor, I was happy to see it come along because I was watching zoning issues where neighborhoods, in my opinion, were being dumped on, being degraded because of commercial development. So I was really looking forward to a good process whereby we would come out at the end and we would have stability for neighborhoods. And people would be able to go somewhere and look at a map or get online and look at a computer screen and be able to depend on what was around them where they thought they were going to buy a house, you know? Well, you know, it went along fine, and then the comprehensive plan was updated, and then now it's in the process of coming to the process to update the zoning code to go along with the comprehensive plan. But before they did that, they wanted to hire a planning director. And quite honestly, Mayor Bartlett dragged his feet on hiring a planning director because the budget, the money was budgeted to hire a planning director several years ago, and Mayor Bartlett took over a year to hire that planning director, which I thought was just totally terrible because so many people had participated and were looking forward to it. So, but I think Plan E-Tulsa has its good points and its bad points. I can't really be specific about that, but I think there's still a lot of work to do in the update of the zoning code, but it needs to be initiated in a reasonable way.
Do you feel there's not enough protections for the neighborhoods since you mentioned the neighborhoods?
You know, I think it depends on how the zoning code is updated, whether I can answer that question or not. And that hasn't been done yet. You know, to me, you know, protecting neighborhoods is paramount because generally speaking, a person's home is their biggest asset and it's where they spend their life and it's their value and it's their quality of life. So to encroach on that, in my view, is not acceptable.
Let's talk a little bit about expansion of public transportation. A lot of people have talked about this. And when you look at long-term our city's history, we've been a car city. We're still a car city. But at some point in this next century, unless we come up with a great invention, we're going to be less dependent on the car. We're going to have to, you know, and that, this goes to sprawl issues and building density within the city as well. But what is your feeling about the expansion of public transportation? Should it be a long-term project? Should we be making progress now? Mm-hmm. What exactly? Mm-hmm.
You know, I travel around the country a lot in my business, and I will tell you that when I go to like Washington, D.C. and New York and San Francisco and even L.A. to a certain extent, you know, there's a lot of public transportation available. And quite frankly, I try not to rent a car. You know, I try to take the public transportation because I love doing it. It's economical and it's really pretty efficient. I think We need to make sure that the people that need public transportation in Tulsa are taken care of. MTTA needs to be looked at. I know they're looking at a T program right now to kind of revamp the route structure.
Bus rapid transit on one route along Riverside, yeah.
Or Peoria, maybe.
Yeah, Peoria and Riverside.
Yeah, Peoria and Riverside. So we need to look at that. But I say to you that, you know, people that live in Oklahoma don't live in Washington, D.C. or New York City. So we're dealing with a different group here, and I'm all for public transportation, but it's kind of the chicken or the egg, because do you spend a lot of money on it and hope that ridership will improve to make it, you know, spend a lot of money to make it convenient, or do you, you know, I don't know the answer, but I do know this. We do not have an adequate MTTA now, And I do say to you that it's important that we take care of the people that depend on public transportation to get to the doctor's office or to get to their job. And, you know,
or plan their life around the hourly bus.
Or plan their life. I know, and you know, there's been a big disconnect there. The timeliness of the connections and all that is horrible. I do say to you that's being looked at now. But I do say to you, too, that, you know, Oklahomans love their freedom and they love their vehicle. So, but I'm all for looking at MTT.
One thing I mentioned to the previous candidate was that, you know, all the cities we aspire to be, the next level of city, not the Washingtons and San Franciscos and New Yorks, but the Denvers, the Dallases, mm-hmm. the Kansas Cities, mm-hmm. Charlotte, North Carolina, they are investing in mass transit. And mm-hmm. it seems like we're being left behind. And I think as a 21st century city, this is something we can't let leave the docks without us because it dooms us down the road.
I agree. I think funding, federal funding, has kind of shrunk.
Yes.
And so it puts more of a burden on the taxpayers of Tulsa because there's only a finite amount of sales tax revenue to go around. But I don't disagree with you. We need to be futuristic and look at that, you know. And you know, the sooner we get started, the less expensive it's going to be. But the reality of it is we have to find the money to do it. It's expensive.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about the other aspect of transportation, that's streets. The street package is in place. Any thoughts about how you would prioritize how things are getting fixed, how they're, you know, and the process of fixing the streets?
I was on the council when we did the first Fix Our Streets package. And I heard the citizens loud and clear that they wanted their darn streets fixed. And I think it's an economic development issue, too, because when people come to Tulsa and look around and drive around to see if they want to live here or not, you know, the streets goes in their mind because it's right now it's a pretty bumpy ride. But having said that, you know, the first package is about to be completed and there'll be a vote of the people to do the second package. I think the reality of it is we need three packages back to back to get our pavement condition index to a level that's acceptable. So I'm all in. One of my big four on my platform is actually the streets because I heard the citizens loud and clear. They want their streets fixed. So we need to make sure that the money that's in those street packages stays in those street packages. You know, there's a movement right now by the current administration to take the 0.167 that used to be the four to fix money for the county for the fairgrounds update. That's now dedicated to street repair and rehabilitation. You know, Mayor Bartlett wants to take that money out of there and put it basically in the general fund and use it to pay for general fund items like police, fire, and some street repair. I'm against that because the reason the streets got in the situation they're in is because when Jim Inhofe did the third penny, it was dedicated to streets and infrastructure. And slowly the bureaucrats kind of chipped away at it to buy capital needs and trucks and different things like that. And, you know, computers and all. So that's why we're in
Snowplows.
That's why we're in the position we're in right now. So we need to dedicate the money that we get, the maximum amount we can, to fixing the streets.
You mentioned economic development. The mayor doesn't control how the economy goes. Not even the president does. But the mayor can have some input in how economic development transpires in the city. What would be your best ideas as mayor?
I think that you're right. The mayor does have the input because, you know, the current regional metro, chamber gets a significant amount of funding from the city of Tulsa and the citizens of Tulsa. They get the half of the hotel motel tax for the Convention and Visitors Bureau, and they get other money as well. So the mayor does have input on that. And one of the ideas I have is, quite frankly, I think we need to do a better job of selling Tulsa. And just one example of that would be, in my opinion, boots on the ground in states and areas of the country that are business unfriendly. You know, more red tape than red carpet, high taxation. You know, we just had a workman's comp, the first reform of workman's comp at the state level. So we need to send people out or hire people to go to those states. Example, California. You know, Phil Mickelson talked about moving out of California because they raised the taxes so much. We need to lasso those people, the small business, the big business, and say, hey, come to Tulsa because we've got a good workforce. We've got good people that live here. We got a low cost of living. We got generally good weather. We're in the center part of the state, and we're just a good place to start and run a business.
You mentioned something that just crossed my mind, the hotel motel tax, and that, you know, this is one part of Vision 2025 that has not worked out the way we hoped it worked, which was that we would get a lot more bigger conventions here to Tulsa as an economic development tool. What can you do to change that? I mean, I know that we have limitations based on hotels in the area, but what can we do to change that?
I think
because we made significant investments.
Yes, we did. I think from what I've been told, the biggest objection from big conventions that look at coming to Tulsa is they don't because we don't have enough hotel rooms in one concentrated area. A lot of those groups that come, they want their whole group to stay in an area. We've got lots of hotel rooms around Tulsa, but they're all around Tulsa. Kind of that sprawl you talked about earlier. Yeah. So we need to work at enticing more hotels, probably, quite frankly, downtown, so that we have the BOK Center that could be used and the convention center. But right now, we don't have enough rooms in a small area. So I think working on that and possibly doing some incentivizing of investment, additional investment in hotels would be a good thing.
All right. Well, we're just about out of time. I want to ask you to tell us why you're the best choice for Tulsa mayor on June 11th.
Well, I think I'm the best choice because I want to combine my 41 years in my small business. You know, I started my own business. I wasn't given my business. I didn't inherit my business. You know, I started my own business. I certainly know the value of their dollar, and I promise them that I will take care of every penny that comes into City Hall as mayor. I think my 10 years on the city council gives me a special advantage because I really do know city government. So that combined with, I think, the training I had in the United States Marine Corps as servant leadership, whereby it's not I'm the boss, I'm the leader of the city. I think those three things combined and my ability to build good relationships with other elected officials, which I learned very quickly by serving with five different sets of city councilors. You know, that's a job. It's like a marriage, you know. It's like it's a give and take situation with a husband and wife. Only it's the other counselors and the other elected officials. So I think my overall skill as a small businessman, my 10 years on the council, and my ability to build relationships and realize that nobody's the king and that reasonableness is a good word and compromise is even a better word makes me the best candidate.
Bill Christensen, thanks very much for joining us.
I really enjoyed it. Thank you.
Former District 8 Tulsa City Councilman Bill Christensen speaking with us here on Studio Tulsa. He's seeking the office of Tulsa Mayor. Election Day is just 6 days away on Tuesday, June 11th. By the way, yesterday we heard from former Mayor Kathy Taylor, and tomorrow we'll hear from the incumbent Dewey Bartlett. All the conversations, once they've aired, will be available anytime on demand at our website, publicradiotulsa.org. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.